Hi there. Can you all hear me? I came into this room earlier today, and not only could I not see the people who were speaking or the panel, which scared the devil out of me, but then I couldn't hear them either. So I thought I'd say, if you can't hear me, wave. That's the best way to get my attention. Okay. My name is Nancy, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 28th, 1990. My home group, thank you, is the Atlantic Group in New York City, and I'm recently transplanting to Miami, Florida. And you know, I look out there, and I look at the miracle of this program, and Marge R. is sitting about five rows back, and Marge R. has known me since the day that I walked into this program. And Terry C. is sitting in the front seat from Chicago, and I met Terry at an AA convention on the Peloponnese Peninsula in Greece. Okay. It was a mixed Greek and English-speaking meeting, and we've had adventures ever since. How many people in this room think they know me? Are just those two? I'm in trouble. I have had a very, very rich life in sobriety. I hope it continues, okay? And it's taken me a lot of places. I've gotten to live in some wonderful places. My home group used to be 12 Coconuts on Waikiki Beach in Honolulu, Hawaii for 2 years. And my home group used to be the Carabasset Firehouse Gang in Carabasset, Kingfield, Maine. And it used to be the Paoli Group in Paoli, Pennsylvania. And it used to be the English-speaking group outside of Geneva on Lake Geneva, and I've forgotten the name of the city, so I have to pass on that one. So I've had a really rich life in sobriety. But I have to laugh when they gave me this topic. A resentment actually got me here on this stage. I want to tell you. Be careful what you ask for. About 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks ago, I was getting all these little emails from people. I'm going to speak. I've been asked to speak. And I said, well, how come I haven't been asked to speak? I've got almost 20 years of sobriety. How come I haven't been asked to speak? Now, really, there's 60,000 people here. I counted the number of speakers in the program at lunchtime today. There were 625 speakers. What is that? One-tenth of one-tenth of 1%? You know, I just laugh at myself. But guess what? About 3 weeks later, I got an email. Somebody, Beth, had dropped out of this speaker program. They didn't tell me that, but I knew. Okay. I knew. And they said, would I speak? And I opened the email up, and I actually started to cry. My tears all welled up. I went, oh, my God, I've been asked to speak. And, oh, my God, I've been asked to speak. And here we are. And, oh, wow. You know, there's about 1,200 of you in this room. That's a lot of people. Clancy draws that many. It's the rain. We know that. Okay. It's a resentment, right? So I thought, okay, resentment. So I just checked on resentments for a minute, because sometimes we get a little iffy about what the definition of things are. First of all, the word is French, and it came from about the early 1600s, so we have to think about what was happening in France in the early 1600s that everybody got a resentment about. Okay. A feeling of displeasure. Persistent ill will at something considered as a wrong, an insult, or an injury. At something as a result of a real or imaginary grievance. Now, who among us has not felt that one? Okay. Some of the definitions are intense indignation, irritation, envy, jealousy, bitterness, gnashing of teeth, heart burning, ill blood, okay, towering passion. There's a Greek translation from Homer that says, what? drunk with anger. That was me. Drunk with wrath, intense indignation, hate, vengefulness, and anger. That's what resentment was for me. Okay. On page 551 in the big book, it says, "Self-pity and resentment were my constant companion." Well, you know, for about 12 years in this program, self-pity and resentment were my constant companions. Okay. I used to practice the resentment diet. Anybody know what that one is? Okay. For 12 years, I had a resentment affair with a man who kept finding alternative love. Okay. Now, every time he would go off, okay, my throat would psychologically close up and I couldn't eat. But about 10 pounds or so later, he would come back and the games would begin again. Well, finally, my sponsor in Carabasset, Maine said, "No more. I'm not going to listen to this. I don't want to hear this. One more time, I'm not listening." And I started getting the message. Passing on my resentment was part of the drama. I would go, "I did it again." And they would go, "How could he? You're such a wonderful person." You know? So now I diet the old-fashioned way. Do not insert food. Okay. That's my diet plan today. Right. I learned how hard the hard way is because I learned the hard way. You know, I spent 12 years in this program not really getting the resentment and not really getting what a resentment can do to me, could do to me, and will do to me. I mean, obviously, I had a lot of resentments. That's how I got here, you know. But AA has taught me, as it says on page 550, that I will have peace of mind in direct proportion to the peace of mind I bring into the lives of other people. Wow. I was sitting on a plane yesterday doing my homework, and next to me was sitting a man ordering a Virgin Mary. I have my big book spread out. I've got the big book, and I got my notepad, and I'm working away. And he orders a Virgin Mary, then he orders a glass of wine, then he orders another glass of wine. And I was sitting in the window seat, so he was next to me, and I'm a righty. So he couldn't help but every once glance over and say, "What is she doing?" Right? I don't know what I brought into his life yesterday, but he certainly reminded me of where I will be, as I get reminded often. I, at the moment, live in Miami. How many people have ever tried to drive a car in Miami? Okay. You know what? I don't drive in Italy. And I work in China quite a bit, so I don't drive in China. Everybody there just got a license. They did. And they gave them four-lane highways. Right? Okay. So I don't drive in China. But I have to drive in Miami. So my most recent resentment has been, you know, that while driving, use your directional signals when planning to turn across three lanes of oncoming traffic. You know. And I have seriously considered using media communications to give broadband driving lessons. You know. But really, the only one in this macro moment of driving who is really affected by that resentment, and that is a resentment. I have to realize that. You know, sometimes they're really big, but sometimes they're really small, right? Is me. You know, after a few rages, right? After a few eyes bulging, after a few hearts pounding, right? Okay, and getting all upset about this, I realize that I'm the only one who's getting upset at the way they're driving. They're not. So now, I pray for them and all around them. Okay. For me, there is a resentment treatment. Okay, and I don't know what my fellow speakers have to talk about, or maybe we'll see how far I get. But the resentment treatment starts with steps 4 through 10. Okay. And in there is a resentment equation. Resentment equals self-will, equals riotous behavior, equals a drink for me. I have no illusions. There is a drink out there, and it has my name on it. I've seen it every once in a while. I've seen it when I'm hungry, when I'm angry, when I'm lonely, when I'm tired, when somebody else is living in my head or my back pocket or any one of those wonderful expressions that we use. Okay, I have seen that drink. I remember one night in Rehoboth, Delaware, just walking out of a meeting on the break feeling absolutely like my skin was crawling. Okay. And heading out on the boardwalk to find something that would soothe it. And I went by an open bar. And there, it was just floating. I just turned and I could see this crystal glass with Harvey's Bristol cream in it. I could smell it. I have no illusions. It shows up every once in a while. It looks really good every once in a while. I'm an alcoholic. The most natural thing in the world for me is to want a drink. So what I have to do on a daily basis is practice the steps that will help to keep me away from that drink. Because, as I said, I have a very, very rich life. I am sober. My children know that when they call their mother, wherever she is in the world, I will pick up the phone and say hello and be sober. They know what I'm like drunk. But now, I've been sober longer than they ever knew me drunk. So I don't want to take that gift away from any of us. So my sponsor, Peggy Byrne, gave me this message. Bring God into the equation. Resentment equals prayer. That prayer is, please, everything I want to make me happy, please give it to her, him, or them. Okay. Resentment plus prayer equals peace of mind in direct proportion to the peace of mind I bring in to the lives of others. And to me, that's a pretty simple solution, really. How easy is it for me to give peace of mind? How easy is it for me to look at the fourth step and the fifth step? More importantly, how easy it for me is to humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings. To make a list of the persons I have harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. To make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And for me, the one that helps to keep me sober on a daily basis, step 10, continued to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I've also learned another lesson in this program, that it doesn't matter whether the person that I feel that I have offended, wrong, spoke harshly to, ignored, trampled on, whomped, you know, with a piece of luggage, stepped on their foot, knows that I've even done that. It doesn't matter. What matters is that I know. What matters is that I take care of that, because that is a resentment. That is sitting back there, niggling away on my brain, where that little voice inside my head says, have a drink, have a drink. Okay. It's just waiting. waiting for the right moment. I don't want that moment. I have been given the tremendous honor to be able to stand up here and speak with you today. I know somebody else was asked first. That doesn't matter. Okay. Because I got to win. Okay. I won. I got up here, and I want to also recognize those under the 624 speakers who have been asked to be part of this. And I also want to recognize those people from Texas and the surrounding states, and everybody who's wearing those green T-shirts that say volunteer on them. And how many people are here from Texas in the room? Well, why don't the rest of us give the rest of those people a great big hand? So with that, I will say thank you for giving me the honor of this moment.
My name is Dave Hall, and I'm an alcoholic. For you people in the back, if you can't hear me, I'm just here to tell you that God is doing for you what you can't do for yourselves. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink. By the grace of God, strong sponsorship, home group, sponsoring people, and for people like you since June the 13th, 1984. I didn't know that after you said that you would, that you could go back and say you didn't want to. Because if I knew there was going to be this many people, I would have said I didn't want to. And it's pretty obvious. I'm here because I'm the Area 39 alternate chair, Western Area of Missouri, and been blessed and honored to do a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used to like to do this stuff, but I used to like to do this stuff when there's 20, 30 people in the room. I'm not so sure I'm real excited about doing it today, but I think it's too late to back out now. But I was really kind of upset when she's. I thought we was here to talk about resentments. It's the only reason I said I would begin with. And when I got sober, I had some sponsors that wasn't much sharper than I am, and I didn't get a lot of good direction. I got a lot of direction, but not a lot of good direction. But I'm glad Nancy went through all this, what a resentment is, and, used Webster and not Dave H.'s version. And because I just thought if you was at somebody, that was a resentment. Because I was always mad at somebody. I mean, I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous because everything was going good in my life. I was really angry. I had a lot of resentments. I was, first of all, the places and people I wanted to hang with wouldn't let me hang with them no more. They told me I couldn't keep coming back. And they said, you need to go sit with these people. And I really didn't want to go sit with these people because they didn't look too exciting. I was brought to Alcoholics Anonymous on January the 2nd, 84, because I was the lady who had just divorced me, we was living together, how that goes. You can't live together if you can't live apart. And she had went to AA to get me sober. And they told her it probably wasn't going to work, that they might be able to help her. But they gave her a bunch of stuff to bring home, a lot of literature and books. And she laid this stuff all over the house. And I'm unscarred by education, if you haven't figured that out by yet. But, I couldn't read real well, so I didn't. There wasn't no pictures, so I didn't think it was for me. But what I had noticed Well, she wasn't talking to me about me anymore. She was talking about this program that she was going to. And she wasn't really concerned about my drinking no more, and I really liked that. But on January the 2nd, I came in from a New Year's Eve drunk, like I always did, and she met me at the door with a resentment. And so I went to A&A with her. I didn't stay sober. I got back here on June the 13th. And the sad story about that is that lady who brought me here took her own life 3 months ago. So we don't all get this deal. But I got in this deal, and I got a sponsor. And, you know, like I said, he wasn't much sober longer than I was. And, you know, he was the best I had at the time, and he kept me going to meetings and knew what I needed to do until I got another sponsor, and he done the same thing. And yeah, I would go to these sponsors with all these resentments, and they would tell me stuff like, pray for them. And I know there's a lot of people in this room today that works for, and you have my blessing. But all it done for me is give me more resentments. And I hooked up with a sponsor who was going around the country giving studies of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he got me involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and taking the actions of the program. And as Nancy said, there's a reason why that resentment, the number one offender, is sitting right where it's sitting in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think Bill knew we all got here on resentments, and there's some action right behind that. A lot of action behind that. And I had to take that action. I had to do the inventories. I had to sit down with those sponsors and talk about that. I'd done 6 and 7. I'd done 8. I went to those people. He didn't have enough. I remember I had called a company I'd worked for, and I owed them some money. I know none of you probably ever done that, but I called this company and tried to make amends for them, and the guy told me, he said, you really don't owe us no money. We're even. And man, I thought, this is great. I can do this deal. And Mike, just tell me when you want to take over.
You have plenty of time, brother. I said,
I can do this deal. So I ran to my sponsor and said, that was taken care of. And he says, where'd you come up with that money? I said, I didn't have to. And he said, what do you mean you didn't have to? I said, they don't want money. He said, we're even. He said, you're not even. You still owe them demands. You are not even. I said, they don't want the money. Are you hard hearing? He said, they don't want the money. He said, well, you pick out your favorite charity and send them the money with their name on it. And I said, I have no favorite charities. Didn't take long for him to find one. But I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. Because that man, he saved my life. He just literally saved my life. A few years went by, and I got into a little financial problems, and this man gave me some money to get out. And he had told me all along he didn't loan money in AA, he just give it. That way he has no resentment. And so I didn't have resentment, he didn't have resentment, I took the money. And a few years later we parted ways because of some things, and it had nothing to do with the money. But we parted ways because of some things that happened in our lives, and that was kind of bugging me. And I talked to an old-timer friend of mine in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said, Dave, you'll never be able to face him if you don't give him the money. I said, now, this guy has got tons of money. I mean, this amount of money don't mean nothing to him, but it means a lot to me. So I don't feel that bad about it. But my wife and I, we were struggling at that time, and my mother had just passed, and in doing that, you know, I came into a little bit of money. And I went and paid the guy the money. About 2 years later, I got a call from Illinois to ask me to come and speak at a big event there. And I asked him, I said, how'd you find me and why would you ask me? And they said, well, this man's doing a big book study here, and we asked him who he wanted to speak, who would he like for us to get to speak on Saturday night. He said, you. Because I took the actions of the program. So if you're new and you're sitting back there, I know I just give you a lot of bad news. But that's why we're here. That's exactly why we're here. I don't know about you, but when I was suffering, the news they give me was never good. But I've been blessed in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a son out of wedlock that I've never seen, might never see. Don't know what happened with that deal, but you know, because of the actions of this program, because of me sweeping my side of the street, God can take care of that. And I don't know what God's plans are. I have two beautiful daughters that I have relationships today, basically because of a resentment. My oldest daughter and I, from time to time, we don't see eye to eye. You know, and that's not good. I try to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But when my youngest daughter's mother passed this year, I had to call the oldest one to tell her that her stepsister's mother's passed. And we got to iron out some things, and I got to make some more amends. I think this step is just an ongoing. As long as I stay sober, as long as I'm human, I'm going to make mistakes. I know that today. But if I stick close to my sponsor and stick close to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and do what I need to do in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and taking the actions of the program, and that's real important. I say it's real important because it was a time in my life when I was real involved in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was going to a lot of meetings. I was going to sponsor a lot of people. I was doing everything I was asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I failed to take the actions of the program. And I know that today because that man who helped me so much that was doing the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous got so racked up in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and not taking the actions of the program drink after 14 years. And I learned from that. And I love that man because he saved my life. And I'll be ever grateful for that guy for carrying this drunk, the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just so honored to be here. And I don't know how long I've talked, but I'm sure. let me tell you another story. I told you I've been blessed. That sponsor I had, he moved to Texas. And I think that's what happened to him. He was really good when he was in Arkansas. They moved to Texas. And I love Texas. I lived in Tyler for 15 months, and I got friends here this morning from Tyler, Texas. I love Texas. There was good AA down there. There's an old-timer down there named Frank Kay that really, I love that guy. He's taught me a lot of good Alcoholics Anonymous. But when I was in Texas, I went to Texas to make money. You know, my sponsor was in a business where he made a lot of money. And I thought, man, he's got a lot of pull and a lot of connections. I can go to Texas and make big bucks. I get down there, and there's a young gal went to a treatment center, and I don't sponsor women anymore. I was 5 years sober then, and I thought I had what she wanted. And but she came through this treatment center, and she was really a mess. I mean, she was a mess. And she had dropped out of university. She had really failed her family in many ways. And But she had a sparkle in her eye, and she looked like she really wanted this program. And she come to me and told me the women wasn't helping her a lot. And I said, well, I will work the steps with you. I will work the steps with you. And I said, when we get to the fifth step, you find a woman, you do that. And then when we get done, you find a woman sponsor. And we worked the steps. And when she done her fourth step, she come over one day and said, I'm ready to do my fifth. And I said, who are you going to do it with? She said, you, shut up and listen. And she gave it to me. And I was able to sponsor her like I would a guy and give her back what she needed. This gal went on to, she's been sober for 22 years. 22 years. She don't do AA anymore. She does church, and it works good for her. She carries the big books or the Bible studies in the halfway houses. And, you know, my wife and I got to go to Tyler, Texas when she walked across the stage and got her diploma. And you would have thought that was our daughter. And that's because I was willing to carry a message. There's a young man down there, his family had millions of dollars. And this guy had been in every treatment center in the country. And he came to me one night and asked me about sponsoring him. And everybody said, don't touch him. Said he's a card-carrying loser. And because I was able to walk the steps with him, and I seen this guy get sober, and he started giving back. And, when he was a year sober, you know, his mom got up there and she said, you know, we are so proud of Bill. He's done a wonderful job. And, you know, he's going to become CEO of his dad's company. And, you know, we've had him in the finest treatment centers in the country. And says, he hooks up with this Yankee from Missouri. Throws a dollar in the basket and been sober for a year. That's a resentment. Put $1 million in his trust fund, none in mine. That kid went on to become CEO of his dad's company. Stayed sober 11 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. He called me one day and said, I'm quitting AA. And I said, why? He said, AA has nothing to offer my kids. He said, I'm going to church. And I suspect, I don't know this, but I suspect that when he got thirsty and wanted to drink, there was nobody in church who understood what he was talking about. And that's why it's so important that I show up for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you and God bless you.
My name is Mike, and I'm an alcoholic. I have a good buddy of mine, Randall, who talks about the sacred awe. And if you could stand where I'm standing at this moment and look out to this room, you know exactly what those words mean. I am overwhelmed with this. And I have a tremendous sense of gratitude and a tremendous sense of humility to stand here and share this with you. But I'm looking at the back and I'm thinking, oh my God, how did I get here? And my sobriety date is January 16th of 1978. And in my home group is the Tuesday night men's stag meeting in Rancho Mirage, California. And it's a podium participation meeting. So I feel very comfortable standing at this podium. And in this letter that I received when I was invited to speak here, it says that if you go on beyond your 20 minutes, our leader will thank you and invite you to sit down. Well, let me assure you, at the Tuesday night men's stag meeting in Rancho Mirage, California, if you run over, we don't thank you. We have other ways, we actually have a couple blind guys that come to the meeting. One guy brings a dog, and we're actually now thinking about training Buddy to attack the speaker, who goes beyond his 3 to 5 minutes, But, you know, it's amazing that I stand here and I have a sense of gratitude and a sense of humility. But what I'm more aware of is that I'm not scared. You know, and for a guy like me who is fear driven, to be able to honestly stand up here and look out and say I'm not scared is an absolute miracle in and of itself. And it dawns on me why that's true. You're my people. You know, I am never as comfortable as when I am in a room of alcoholics. You know, and I love that. I am an off-the-chart introvert, you know. For me to stay, I will guarantee you when I leave here, the first thing I want to do is go back to my hotel room and take a nap. This stuff is exhausting for me. You know? But I'm here through God's grace. And everything I have in my life that has any value and any meaning is because I'm sober. Yeah. And I never, ever want to forget that. And my life feels today at this moment like it has come full circle. Yeah. I look out in this audience, and it's not lost on me that there are two people sitting in this room today who have known me since the moment of my birth. And have been so instrumental in my life. These two people have loved me unconditionally and were as close to me as my parents ever were. And so for the first time, I am publicly going to thank George and Claudine for being a part of my life. Thank you very much. I'm also well aware of the fact that there are two other people sitting in this room that I have known from the moment of their birth because I was in the delivery room. You know? And Sarah and Caitlin, thank you for being here today. And you are absolutely the loves of my life. My twin daughters. Yeah. And you know, I was sitting with my sponsor 3 or 4 months ago, and he said, "Hey, listen, do you have any interest in speaking at the international convention?" I said, "Hell yes, I have an interest in speaking at the international convention." But my first thought after that was, you know, it's probably never going to happen, you know, because who in their right mind would invite a guy like me to stand at this podium and share, you know? So I'm already beginning to build a resentment because I know I've been asked to gauge my interest, but I know I'm not going to be asked. And sure enough, 3 or 4 weeks later, this letter arrives in the mail inviting me to speak. And my next first thought was, I wonder what took him so long to ask me. Because that's what, you know, that's what my thinking does to me. And that's why in the 11th step in the big book, it says, on awakening, you know, we ask God to direct our thinking. You know. And thank goodness I have reached a point in my sobriety where I can ask God to direct my thinking. Because my thinking is always all over the map. And then lo and behold, when I looked at the topic, resentment, the number one offender, I knew with an absolute certainty that God had a sense of humor. And because I have recently come through a challenging period, and it was only because of the connection I have with Alcoholics Anonymous and with you people, and it's only my ability that I have acquired through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the program, that I was able to kind of just move through this period of time and realize, like we all do as we move through these periods of time, that we're okay. And what a great gift that realization is to each and every one of us, that we're okay. You know, I love what you said. You know, I don't need to talk about resentments. We all know what those are. We all know what those are. But you know, the awareness that I acquired was resentments were one thing for me. But the real challenge I had in my life was fear. And I became well aware of the fact that the spiritual diseases that stem from resentments, and I believe what the book says, the spiritual diseases that stem from resentments, those are also known as character defects. And it became apparent to me that I had to begin to address the fear that I carried in order to be able then to be able to address the character defects in my life. And the only way I have ever found through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in the fellowship is to be able to talk about it. And that's what I've been able to do. There are men in this room this very moment who know everything about me. Men that I have been able to become gut level honest with and say, this is who I am. And share those fears. 12 and 12 talks about, you know, it's a self-centered fear that activates all those character defects. I get that today. I truly understand that today. 12 and 12 also talks about the fact that, what I failed to realize was my total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. And because that was so true in my life up to a period of time, I operated with this sense of isolation and being apart from and separate from, indifferent from. And you people showed me I don't have to continue to live my life like that. Because, you know, in the home that I was raised, you couldn't escape that environment without resentments. And it was fear-producing. And I lived in that fear. But I would move from fear to terror. But I didn't know how to go from resentment to forgiveness. And I did not know how to go from fear to faith until I came into these rooms. And this is where you taught me how to live. And I thank each and every one of you. And the majority of you I don't know, but we do know each other. You know, we absolutely know each other because we share a common denominator. We share that sense of spiritual connection. And for that, I am most grateful. And I stand here today and I really think about, you know, this whole thing about, you know, the grace of God and what we've been given and our ability now to have a sense that we are connected and that we can share with one another. None of us escape the challenges in our life. None of us escape the resentments and the fears and the self-pity and the loathing and all the stuff the book talks about. But no longer is that where I need to live. Today I can live in the sunlight of the Spirit. And I have the ability today with the help of other people, and primarily other men in my life who can help me remove the blocks and keep that connection to the God of my understanding strong and vibrant. And that's all I want today. I want to move through this day, not with those sense of resentments that I carried. I didn't just have a resentments. I had a circle of hatred. And if you were in my circle of hatred, I was going to keep you there. You may try to get out, but I was going to drag your ass back in. And because I wasn't finished with you yet. And people said, Mike, it doesn't have to be like that any longer. Is that if you are truly prepared to live in the program, the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, a whole new way of living will unfold for you. And that's what I know to be true today. You know? For the newcomers that may be with us this afternoon, you know, it is our collective hope is that you hang in here long enough to truly experience the miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there are so many miracles. And there are so many promises beyond the ones that we really talk about in the book. The book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, once I really began to believe in the power of the words contained in the big book, once I got out of my head and allowed that message to move to my heart, then I really began to sense the power of this program. And that doesn't happen overnight. That doesn't happen overnight. But it happens. And that's the message. That's the great message that we have. I have today the ability to ask for help. And I shared this just a few days ago. The ability to ask for help. But more importantly today, I have the willingness to accept that help when it is so freely offered. And that's the key. I could ask for it, but I couldn't take it in. I couldn't allow you to really help me. Those days are over. I will tell you, you know, after 32 years of sobriety, I feel like a newcomer. I absolutely love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get fired up about this, you know. And I see the absolute power that it has to change lives. You know, we no longer have to live in the problem. Because let me tell you something. I tried to find, you know, the answer is not in the problem. The answer is not in the problem. The answer is in the answer. And the answer is contained within the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Make no mistake about that. And I love this, and to me this is the fellowship, and this is the evidence of the fact that having had a spiritual awakening, you know, we can come in here, and it is undeniable that God resides in this room at this moment, because there are 1,000+ miracles sitting in this room today. And how wonderful is this? You know, I was walking across the street, and my daughter, Caitlin, she said, "Dad, are you nervous?" And I said, "Well, not until you just asked me. I really hadn't really thought about it." But I was thinking, you know, isn't it fortunate for San Antonio that we're not all drunk? And I thank God I'm not, you know. Another meeting I go to in the desert, it's a 5:30 a.m. meeting, and we will frequently say, "You can't make this stuff up," you know? And we can't make this stuff up. It's incredible, you know? And, you know, I have acquired the ability through this program, and I live my life with a set of very distinct priorities, and I share this. You know, the number one priority in my life today is my sobriety. Everything else I have is because I'm sober. You know, a marriage of 30-plus years, my wife never seen me pick up a drink. To our marriage, we have been blessed with 3 beautiful daughters. So my sobriety is number one. My relationship with God, you know, relationship I have with a higher power today that I established in these rooms, in this program, you know. I was a product of Catholic schools and Catholicism and 14 years of that. And I was raised in the era of the Catholic Church when we still talked a lot about mortal sins and venial sins. The difficulty with that was mortal sins were the ones that would condemn you to hell forever and ever and ever. And that always seemed like a pretty long time to me. But venial sins were the lesser of the two evils. And if you died with venial sins on your soul, you stopped off in this miraculous place called purgatory for a few million years, but you would eventually acquire the gates of hell. Of heaven. Let me restate that. You would eventually acquire the gates of heaven. Here was the challenge. Mortal sins were the most fun to commit. And the nuns used to teach us, and I absolutely believed it, and I brought these kinds of ideas and concepts into these rooms. Nuns said, if you're thinking about it, it's just as bad as doing it. Well, for an alcoholic in the making, I'm thinking, well, if that's the case, why just not do it? You know? And I did it. And here I stand. But the relationship I have with the God today is one with a loving God, a God that wants the absolute best for me, is well and alive in my life, and accepts me unconditionally. Third priority is all aspects of my health, spiritual, emotional, mental, physical. And I've learned that in these rooms. My marriage, the relationship I have with my three daughters, the relationship I have with men in my life, my go-to guys, men who just absolutely accept me for who I am. All the flaws, all the defects, all the challenges. Makes no difference to them. Where else but in Alcoholics Anonymous could I have found that? I don't know anywhere. The relationship I've reestablished with my brothers and sisters. Those are priorities to me. Those are the things that make a difference in my life today as the direct result of this program. And one of the things that I absolutely have come to cherish and that has moved me so far away, from the resentments and has made the fear manageable and has allowed the other character defects, to subside. I happen to believe I'm no more cured of my character defects than I am my alcoholism. But I think the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous allow me to manage them on a daily basis. And I believe what the 12 and 12 says. It says we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings such as He could or would under the conditions of the day we ask. And that means, life changes every day. And as a result of life changes, I will experience different defects of characters and different challenges in my life on a daily basis. It gives more credence to the whole thing about 24 hours at a time. And I love that understanding, and you've taught me that. But the thing I carry with me today, more than anything, is the connection I have with other people in this program. And I'm going to wrap this up, and I'm going to read one paragraph from the Big Book. And this is a paragraph, and there are many, many wonderful messages in this book. Here's the trick. You got to read it. You pick it up, you take it off the shelf, you dust it off, and you read it. This is the second chapter, or the second paragraph in chapter 7, titled Working with Others. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. That's the way it is for me today, and I hope that's the way it is for you. Thank you.